This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Marta Mendoza from the Porto Protocol. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you.
Excellent. We're going to be talking today about reusing wine bottles as part of a way of managing the carbon footprint in wineries. Before we get into that, do you want to tell us a little bit about the Porto Protocol, what it is, how it started, and you know, what it does or is trying to do?
Yes, I really do. So first of all, we are the biggest global wine community, sharing knowledge, practices, and challenges to catalyze climate action in the wine world. We were founded by Taylor Sport. This organization today is possible due to Taylor Sport, but the fact is that in practice we have a community of around 250 members spread across the wine value chain and the world, so from regions to from South Africa to California to Austria, you name it, so many wine regions, and companies of every single profile. So we have some of the biggest wine companies in the world as part of this network, and we have very small ones, companies that produce like 400 cases, or some are even still planting their own vines. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, we also have packaging companies, core companies, design agencies, climate services companies, tech companies, all sharing what they're doing to address something that has to do with wine and climate change. And this sharing happens in a variety of ways. It happens through as case studies, in webinars, in conferences, in workshops, but most importantly, it happens in our collaborative networks, and that will lead us to one of the topics that we have today. We have four impact areas that we work on. That is packaging, because it's the element that contributes the most to the carbon footprint of wine. Water, because no matter what producer we speak to, no matter where in the world, it is by far their biggest challenge, may it be from a scarcity or abundance standpoint. Ecosystems, because as someone we know says, we have never seen a forest of vines. And so this idea of fostering biodiversity, of managing a vineyard, not as a vineyard, but as an ecosystem, not just below ground, but above it and around, is something that we find key, and it's one of the biggest challenges that we're facing. It's biodiversity loss. And the other is what we call seeding the future, which is about climate strategy. Since we have so many small companies that have no idea where they are and where to start addressing climate, this is a way of helping. It's an umbrella for all the three other areas that I just told you about, but it's also an area on its own. And a very important thing about the Porto Protocol is that we are not here to judge what companies are doing. We are here to meet them where they are. And that means that we have champions, like, for example, you just interviewed Jason Haas from Tabbles Creek. He's a member of ours. And we have other companies that are just starting. And the beauty of what we do is seeing champions learning from beginners and seeing beginners learning from champions. So witnessing collaboration and what we call collaborative sharing in the name of a greater good that is not only the wine industry, but making sure it's here to last and it's here to be an example to mitigating climate change is what we do every single day.
Why are you called the Porto Protocol? Is it because of Taylor's Port?
No, it is not. The reason why is we came out of two conferences that took place in Porto in 2018 and 2019 called Climate Change Leadership Solutions for the Wine Industry. The first one had Barack Obama as the keynote speaker, the second Al Gore. And although they have nothing to do with wine, though they might appreciate wine, I'm sure, these conferences were focused on climate solutions, not climate change. And the Porto Protocol came out as a commitment that many of the participants in these conferences signed to commit to do more for climate change. So the protocol is our letter of principles. And I welcome and I want to invite your listeners to join us and sign our letter of principles to start with, to start engaging with us and Porto, because it took place in the city of Porto.
Fair enough. Okay, let's talk about reusing wine bottles, because wine bottles are a big carbon footprint. People talk about packaging and transportation as being the sort of almost half the the carbon footprint in a bottle of wine. Some of the transportation issues might go away as we decarbonize the transportation industry. And glass bottles can potentially be decarbonized and we move away from gas as the fuel source. But reusing, you know, the triple, isn't it? Reduce, reuse, and then recycle. At the moment, sadly, in the UK, we recycle, but not in a closed loop. We recycle our glass bottles, we grind them up, and we use them as road aggregate. We reuse them, but not continuously. So this idea of taking a bottle and being able to reuse it sounds quite good, but there's lots of logistic problems. For example, in the UK, the UK government has just recently said they're going to do a deposit return scheme, but they're not going to include glass because even though they intend to get the glass, grind it up and store it, they say it's just too bulky to manage. So there is clearly some issues associated with reusing glass. What are you hoping to achieve first?
All right, let me take a step back and tell you a little bit how we got here and how we got to not wanting that, but making that happen. So as we said, as the Porto Protocol, we have collaborative networks. And one of them we call it Bottle Loop. We just named it recently, but the fact is we've been working on it for at least 2 years. And how it happened was I don't know if it was by chance, very honestly, I don't even know how it happened. We started getting to know companies, people that were working somehow in reusable wine bottle schemes. One of them was, for example, Muriel Châtel, which I'll tell you about more for sure during this conversation, that is the founding manager of Sustainable Wine Solutions that in the UK already does refillable wine bottles. And then we met this lady called Diana Sais. She's a winemaker at Domaine du Jacques in Burgundy as well as in Napa Valley, she's American, in Snowden Vineyards. And then we met Melissa Saunders, that is a wine importer in New York, that although she already works a lot with other containers rather than a glass, with bag-in-box, etc., well, mostly with bag-in-box, she really wants to make this work. And with these three ladies and with other people that we met in the meantime, like, for example, Rivino, which is a reusable wine bottle scheme in Oregon, and Conscious Container, that is another project in California, with Vin Richard, that is a big company in France that has been reusing bottles, and this is a wonderful example for this conversation, for more than 20 years, and rewashing and bottling their wine in and we're talking about millions of bottles. So little by little, we got in touch with a variety of ways of reusing wine bottles. And what we started to do was piecing the puzzle of bringing these people together with the aim of accelerating reusable wine bottle schemes, because there's no standard. There's no standard because this is a new industry on the rise. And in a way, we believe that's the mission we have for this particular topic, to help this, to piece the puzzle and to accelerate it. And that can happen with collective work and collective learning and with collaboration.
So what are the pieces of the puzzle?
The pieces of the puzzle is looking at what is this as a value chain, is almost deconstructing and looking at all these schemes that we know, trying to understand what they have in common and what they don't have. So for example, one of the pieces of the puzzle, and it was considered one of the most challenging ones, was the label, washing off the label. So when you have people speaking about it, speaking to each other, understanding what label are you using, it's a wash-off label. What are the exact technical specifications of that label that will help overcome this challenge? That's one piece of the puzzle, for example. The other piece of the puzzle, and looking, trying to step outside and look at the overall picture, is who is going to wash the bottle? So, and in some cases, like for example, the example I gave you from Vin Richard in France, or there's another example, for example, in Belgium, Café Coq, that it's another company that has been doing this for ages, they have washing machines to wash the bottles, because again they wash millions of bottles that they bottle their wine in. But for example, in Austria, there's a scheme that has been running for more than 10 years, the Styria bottle in the Styria region, that there is a company that washes the bottles. So that's a very, very important part of this puzzle. That is the trickiest one when we are talking about countries where this piece does not exist. Okay, so that's another piece of the puzzle. The other is the reverse logistics. That is a very expensive process right now. That's another piece of the puzzle.
I would have thought that's the piece that's the most difficult, getting the bottles from the consumer back to the winery or wherever the wine's being bottled. I would have thought that's the most difficult part, because they always talk about the last mile in terms of delivery, but it's worse than that, because it's coming from a very random aggregated, spread out. You know, I've got one bottle here, you've got one bottle there, and trying to get them to a central point. I would have thought that would be quite tricky.
It's one of them. There are many tricky parts. Nobody's saying that this is easy at all. You're talking about the consumer. So we have systems that work on B2B, like sustainable wine solutions, and then there are systems that work on B2C with the consumer. And that means that they are relying on the consumer to bring back the bottle. That's challenging. But one of the ways that can be overcome is either by educating the consumer, but that will take long, because this is not the only industry that... I mean, there are industries where you are drinking from a reusable bottle and chances are you don't even know. So for example, chances are you're drinking a beer from a reused bottle and you don't even know, because the system is already in place and it's prepared for that. And you don't even have to know if it's not a closed loop, actually, but it's more rather than an open loop. And what I mean by this is, for example, there are several of these reusable wine bottle schemes that we know that have reusable on the bottle, that have reuse or something of a kind, or refill, doesn't matter. And so, for example, the one in Austria, it works in the way that the scheme has a partnership with Spar supermarkets, so they have 400 deposit points. So when you put a Styria bottle that has the Styria symbol of the region embossed on the bottle, you put it on the deposit machine and it recognizes that bottle should follow a specific process because it's from the Styria scheme. But imagine, for example, Vin Richard, it doesn't have anything written on it because they do the reverse logistics. So it doesn't rely necessarily on the consumer to go back and give the bottle back, because it goes to their shop or any bottle goes into that loop. So it doesn't matter if it's a bottle that says reuse or whatever, it's just a bottle probably from a particular model, that it's probably a Burgundy or a Bordeaux box, bottle that anyway are the most used worldwide. So that can be overcome. It can be overcome, especially if you don't put the responsibility on the consumer.
Can we go through some models that different businesses follow? I mean, in the old days in France, you could just turn up to the Carrefour or your supermarket or wherever it is you're getting your wine from, bring a jug with you and just pour the wine in, get it filled up and take it home and you're done. And that was a very common method for entry-level wines in France for a very long time, until they got rid of that, probably about 20 years ago.
Yes, I think so.
It was a shame. But could you walk us through how Moriel does it? She's in Borough Market in London. Can you just go through her business model of reuse?
Yes. So what Moriel does is, Moriel imports wine mostly in bulk, although she does have some bottled wine as well. It's important. I want to talk about solutions, but I want to explain also what the some challenges are. Yep. So they don't come with the name of the appellation, because many appellations do not allow you to ship in bulk. Okay?
That's right.
So, but nevertheless, and this is very important for the UK, that's why the UK is such a immense potential for this. 70% of the wine, or more or less 70% of the wine that comes in the UK, comes in bulk anyway.
Yeah.
So she imports the wine in bulk, and she works with the on-trade. That means she works B2B. So she supplies her customers that are venues, bars, restaurants, etc., either in reusable kegs for wine on tap, or in refillable bottles. And what she has is, she has this burgundy bottle that has a white stripe, okay? So she supplies the restaurant, for example, with those bottles filled, and she brings back the empty ones. Okay, and that's so it's reverse logistics, and she controls the whole value chain because she washes the bottles herself as well. Yeah. So she has the machinery to do the whole thing.
So she's going to businesses and then collect, as she drops the, it's like the old milk bottles, you know, the milkman comes along, collects your old empties and then gives you your milk. So that's that model there.
Yes.
Okay. And I can see that works quite well where you've got some businesses who are buying significant quantities. So the cost of collecting the bottles is part of the delivery anyway. Does she deliver the wines herself? They have their own delivery system rather than couriers. Yes.
And she has already, of course, I don't live in London nowadays, but there are amazing names from the hospitality industry and restaurants adhering to this model. And that's very, very important for it to spread.
Okay. So that's a model that is business to business.
Yes.
Can you give us some example of a business to consumer model that works?
Yes. So the one that I was telling you about, the Styria region, the way it goes is there is, of course, a local body that runs the scheme, the Styria scheme. And so they have the embossed bottle as I mentioned before, with the symbol of...
So they've got a special bottle that's made for them. Because one of the problems I always think of is standardization. How do you... No one wants 20 different coloured, shaped bottles because it would just look bad on a shelf. Okay, so you've got a standard bottle.
Yeah, but has an embossed symbol on it.
Yep.
And so the deposit machine where you would go and put your glass containers recognizes that bottle, and so it goes into the scheme. And there is a facility for the washing, a variety of wine producers that are part of this scheme. So this is a region in Austria that produces wine. So there are a series of wine producers that are part of this scheme, and this has been running for 10 years.
Okay, but it's local wineries. And people buy the local wine, they drink the local wine, there's a deposit return scheme.
When they go to the supermarket,
they
just return the bottles.
Do they get money back?
Yes, or a deposit return scheme is absolutely crucial.
Okay.
Many people from an organization, in this case, Port of Portugal, we believe that deposit return schemes are really important because you need to... If you want to rely on the consumer, you must give him something back.
Yeah.
Because otherwise... Why would you bother? Yes, you would bother if you believe in it as someone that wants to reduce your impact on the environment. Otherwise, you would need to incentivize. But for example, Vin Richard, that I also mentioned in this call, that they are an extremely known company in France. They've been doing this for so long. They also have their own shops. So they've been doing this for very long. But in France, and this is very important, France already has legislation for producers, and it's the only country in the world where that happens. But it's also the biggest wine producer in the world that has legislation for wine producers that they have to have at least 5% of their bottles into reusable schemes. So there are a myriad of facilities coming to life, and many are already working and are already in place for this whole loop to work. And in that case, the bottles don't say anything. They do. So the bottle itself is a normal bottle. For example, we have a member of ours called OE for Good, that they source wines from a variety of places, and they are also part of this scheme. Another member of ours that is a renowned a French producer, which is Maison Chaptier, is also part of one of these schemes. But this is something, and that is very important, that is the government that is promoting.
Yeah.
So the government is promoting reuse, not recycle, reuse. So it's setting up these schemes. So there are a myriad, again, of washing facilities that are coming to place to put all this working. And that means that if you're drinking your wine in Paris, the bottle is not washed in the center of the country, so that you have proximity. Because that is another very important piece of the puzzle. Reusing is a solution. It's not the only solution. And what we're trying to foster is that this is taken as a serious solution to decarbonize the industry. Not the only one. It's not always possible as it is, because it is feasible and it is environmentally and financially sustainable within a certain perimeter. And that has to be respected for this to work. And for us to, or for this to actually become widespread as an industry and to grow as an industry, of course it has to make business sense as all, not yeah. as well, not only environmental sense.
Can you give another example of a business to consumer system that works?
Well, yes, completely different. Okay, but for example, in the US there are two completely different systems. So one is called LJ Crafted Wines, and it's based in San Diego, and it's a tasting room. So it's Lowell, that's the owner. He sources wines from a variety of places in California. He has the wines in his tasting room in barrels, okay? And he patented a system that I think he invented himself, to take wine out of the barrel with no oxygen leaks to serve directly into the refillable bottle that people take and come back. And then there's another very interesting scheme that works in a variety of ways. I don't know exactly the details, but it can be a wonderful benchmark, because it's a venue called City Winery, and City Winery was opened by a very known personality from the music industry called Michael Dorf. And Michael controls the whole value chain, in fact, from the vineyard to the glass. So he has music venues, but he also has one place in Central Station in New York where people go and fill in the bottle and take back. So you have a deposit. But that's one for consumers. But he works both ways. He works, you have, for example, reusable kegs, but then you have the refillable bottle that works just with consumers.
So is he collecting bottles? He's not collecting bottles. He's letting consumers just
kegs
to...
No, but in that case, yes. And then the people take the refillable bottle and they fill in at his venue at Central Station, New York.
Yeah, okay. One of the problems I see with a lot of these is that there's a lot of rules that say you must fill in the region, especially in Italy. Italy particularly seems really bad at this, and France to some respect as well. In Italy, there's rules that say you must use this type of bottle and you must use this stopper in it.
Yes,
and
yes.
It's very prescriptive.
Italy is really, really restrictive.
Yeah.
But let me tell you about an exception. There is a company called Cantina del Hospo, and I'm going to be very honest with you, I can't remember the name of the region because it's a tiny region, and it's a beautiful story. It's a beautiful project of this guy called Tommaso that I think his grandparents are from that specific wine region that was almost abandoned, and he decided to bring it back to life. And Tommaso is reusing bottles, and he was able to have he's completely in compliance because he was able to have the local municipality let him reuse the bottles and approve his washing machine and his washing method. And one of the reasons being is that we're dealing with alcohol. Alcohol itself kills a lot of... We are an alcoholic drink, so even that helped him with the arguments to have the agreement for him to be able to reuse the bottles. But they are an exception, because indeed Italy is one of the countries where we're struggling the most to foster this idea, for sure. But so it's amazing to have stories like the one of Tommaso and to be able to tell those stories. And you might say that those stories are so specific, and we know quite a few. They're so specific, they're so tiny, that they might even only complicate. But they are stories of the people that decided to take the road less traveled for the most amazing reason, which is really to really mitigate their environmental impact of their wine production. Because they love wine, because everyone in the wine industry is passionate about wine, but they want to do it in a way that really is the less impactful to the environment.
All right then, Martha, I think we'll wrap it up there. Thank you very much.
Thank you.